This afternoon, we will have a series of talks that relate to what's called as the PIRE project. And as an introduction, I would give you an overview of what the PIRE program actually is and what the project we are working on is about and who works on the project. And then you will have another five talks during the afternoon to actually learn about the actual research that we and the other places are doing within PIRE. So PIRE is an abbreviation for Partnership for International Research and Education. It's a program of the American National Science Foundation, and I will show some points from the program. And we have the funding. I mean, by we, I mean mainly the U.S. side has funding for research in the area of using deep representation, a meaning representation, or deep semantics for both spoken language understanding and machine translation. And this is the topics that the other talks will be about eventually. So the PIRE program general objectives, and I took it from the NSF web and make it much shorter because there was a lot of political talk about around it. So first of all is to, obviously, the usual goals of any public funding is to support good research. But specifically, this program is for the cooperation between U.S. and European institutions. As you might know or maybe don't know, if you apply for even a European project, it's very difficult to get someone from the United States to cooperate on it because the European Union would not give money to anyone outside Europe, except in very exceptional cases, and vice versa. If there is a grant in the United States, it's possible, but it's kind of difficult. It cannot be done in a direct way to give money to people who are outside of the United States. So this program is specifically a slightly different one, which actually pushes for such cooperation. On the other hand, this is not a regular research project, as you might know from your countries or the EU or even the US. This one is meant mainly for education. So the educational part, despite being part of every research project, is kind of stressed a lot in this case. So it has to support research experience, especially for students. By students, we mean PhD students. And again, especially the US students who work normally in the United States. So of course, it's aimed at future cooperation as well. And it also should serve as a test whether this type of cooperation is viable and whether it brings actually any results or better results than other type of cooperation. So as I said, it's mainly aimed as the students who study at a US institution, like mainly universities, to actually come to Europe and look how research is done in Europe, maybe take some courses and continue in their research once they return back. So our project that was submitted 2 years ago, and it's actually started last year, right? So it's about 2 years ago. And so what we wanted to do is, as I said, to use kind of more deep or deeper linguistic analysis for these two applications. One of them would be spoken language understanding, and the other one is machine translation. So the partners in these projects are, first of all, Johns Hopkins University, where Fred Jelinek works, and he's the main, how we call it, the principal investigator, or PI, of the project. And Sanjeev is from the same place, and actually Jason Eisner, I think, is also named on the project. From Brown University, it's Eugene Charniak and also Mark Johnson, and of course the students from those two places who are kind of the most important ones who will be supported from the project and who will travel. And then from the European side, there is the University of Saarbrücken or Saarland Universität, and it's Dietrich Klakow and also Valia Cordoni just came, and the students from there. And from our side, it's me and our students who work on similar topics. So the duration of the project is for 5 years. It started last year. And this morning we have the second PIRE internal workshop. I mean, this whole thing, even this afternoon, is part of the workshop. And this is the public part when we want to present some of the work the students are actually doing under this project. So as I said, it's mainly for the PhD students. So the students who study at the US institution, or in this case, the Johns Hopkins University and the Brown University, will be admitted as usual to their PhD programs, and they will be funded by the PIRE project, but at some point they will come over to Europe and spend some time either at the Saarbrücken University or here in Prague. And they should do some learning of what we do. In our case, it's actually the linguistic part, the meaning representation, and that's the thing that you actually saw last week in the tutorial, and you will probably hear, and you have seen some of the talks at, on Friday and Saturday as well. But they will also do their own research while staying abroad and just getting in contact with the other PhD student and the researchers at the European places. On the other hand, even the European students who work on the topics from this program, they won't get funded from the PIRE program. They will have to get the European funds or national funds. But they will also go to the States for either short stays or to workshops that will be organized within the PIRE project. One thing that we are doing and we will do is these workshops. So we had one last year here in Prague. The second one is again in Prague, just because we thought it's nice to make it part of this Methysius courses. But the next one will be in Saarbrücken in June, again in a slightly different format, and it will be also complemented with a longer workshop, and maybe you, Valia, will say something about it or someone later on. Okay. So, and there will be other workshops in the remaining years of the project, and I believe some of them will be also eventually in the US. So what was our motivation? Not the NSF. I already told you what the NSF motivation is for creating such a program. What was our motivation for bringing the topic of using a deep syntactic and semantic representation into those two applications? So let's take the case of speech recognition. And you have heard, or you will hear this week also at least two different talks about speech recognition. Currently, the way that speech recognition is done, it's probably more appropriately described as transcription. So what you want the computer to do is, if you talk like I do or anyone does, either as a monologue like this or maybe spontaneous speech or whatever, or TV news, you want the transcription of what was said. And the programs are actually pretty good, at least in some circumstances, in putting down in words what you have said, exactly what you said, I mean. So it will give every word you said on, not on paper, but in the electronic form. Based on this idea, it's also the evaluation of those systems, I mean the scientific evaluation of those systems, how well they do, is based on the same idea. So let's have the real transcription of the person has said, usually done by people who listen to what was said and they put exactly what the words are. And then when the automatic speech recognition system outputs the words, those words are matched against the correct transcription, and the system is evaluated. And there is a measure that's called the word error rate, which is not, you know, there are some insertions and deletions problems and so on, but essentially you get a number that says how many words you got right and how many words you got wrong. But if, especially in the case of spontaneous speech, sometimes this measure might be quite misleading. So just if you have a look at the screen, so if this is the actual transcription, what was said, so and I, then some partial word, a procedure which computes a function and a guess, initial guess, this is an actual transcript from an MIT lecture. I think it's from some of your data. I just took an example from there. So it's actually a lecture about the Newton method for getting a root of a function. So you have a procedure that computes a function value, I guess, and some initial guess for that. So it's just one segment of that. Now, if one system outputs the following two lines, so a procedure which, whatever, if you look at the words are, you know, pretty close to the original sentence, and therefore the word error rate is not so bad. 19%, it's not, you know, it's not good, but of course it's a pretty good number. But if you look at the sentence, of course, you can see that not even the main verb was correct, but still the number is pretty good. So if you show this to someone, he might have trouble, even in the context of the talk, to distinguish that there was actually the verb compute. On the other hand, if you have something that would normally put into print if someone tells you this sentence, and a procedure which computes a function and an initial guess, this sentence actually gets the word error rate twice as much. So it looks like it's twice as bad as the original one, simply based on this measure. So definitely there is something wrong with it, and that's one of the reasons why we should look closely at what actually we want speech recognition to do, and also how to measure it possibly. So that was one thing. For machine translation, the motivation is similar. The best systems today, which are statistically based and which translate mostly phrases by phrases. So the original systems in the 90s translated usually words by words. Nowadays, the best system translate by phrases. By phrase, I mean in a sequence of words. It's basically continuous. There are some attempts to use some more structure for statistical translation. They're also somewhat successful. They are sometimes almost as successful as the other systems, or sometimes even better. It's very hard to distinguish. But anyway, the best systems are phrase-based. Now, again, for machine translation, there is a measure how well the system does. That measure is, of course, even from the beginning, a little bit more problematic than the word error rate, which is for a long time considered to be the best measure for speech recognition. For machine translation, after a while, when people were using kind of subjective evaluations, just hired people and said, well, how well this is translated by the machine, but this was so expensive and you could only do it a few times a year, or maybe not even that. So then people came with an automatic measure, which also measured one sentence against another sentence. Now, it's obvious that for machine translation, it cannot be word by word. So there is a slightly more complicated measure than the word error rate that tells us how two sentences compare, you know, how close they are to each other. So again, if you look at the example that I have here, here is the Czech original. You don't have to understand it because this is the true translation, which you, I guess you understand. So Kaufmann and Broad, the home building company, declined to identify the institutional investors. That's the correct translation. Actually, that's the original sentence because we were translating to Czech. Someone was translating the sentence to Czech. Now, if you look at output of two systems, and these systems, at least this is virtual. I mean, no system does this. This is actually one of our reference translations, again, done by humans. But let's suppose this is done by a machine. And then we have another translation, which is actually close to the word-based system that we are using, the GISA++, which is a public statistical machine translation system. If you look at these two translations, I mean, you as people can definitely say which one is better. Even without knowing that the first one was actually made by humans, you would probably guess that as well. So, to you, this is quite clear. But, I wouldn't be telling this if it's not the surprising case that, I mean, at least to some, that by the usual scoring, this one would get a higher score simply because the sequences of words found in that sentence were closer to the original translation. But again, this is not neither good English nor it's nice English. So again, we have a problem. Now, one of the problems is that the phrase-based systems look at phrases, so they get some of the syntax correctly if it's local to the phrases, but usually they don't get correct the things that have a bigger distance or which need some information from a little bit farther apart than those few words. So one of the ways how to correct that is actually to analyze the original sentence. Well, that's the idea of machine translation 30 years ago, even though at that time no one was able to do it. Now we want to merge the experience from the statistical systems and from the linguistic analysis that was done before. So what are the suggested, well, not maybe not solutions, but actually the steps that we would like to try within this project? So first we have to look at the evaluation. What is a good evaluation, or how to change the evaluation to actually prefer what people normally prefer. The other thing is to design, to suggest new system designs that would incorporate the deep linguistic analysis for both speech understanding and machine translation, and also maybe to try to do something that people are talking about for maybe 10 years now, but no one actually did it in the way that it's meant to be, and that's actually use hybrid methods, which would combine the statistical methods that we know well how to deal with, and the kind of the old-fashioned rule-based methods that were used before. So the project kind of nicely divides into two or maybe three areas. One is we have to work on the meaning representation and find out which meaning representation can help in achieving those goals, and then to try these meaning representations that will be developed under this project or were taken over from other projects in those two applications, namely the speech understanding or speech reconstruction and machine translation. So first of all, for those of you who haven't been here at the TreeBank tutorial last week, so at least I will show one example what I mean by meaning representation. In this case, it's taken from the Prague Dependency TreeBank, and it's called the tectogrammatic representation of the meaning of the sentence. In this case, the sentence is, I had problems with my teeth in the past. I had only problems with my teeth in the past, meaning I never had. I was. Oh, okay. Well, that's actually a question, you know, what people meant by that. Anyway, so this the representation as you see has some features that the usual syntax-based representations don't have. So first of all, in Czech we don't use the personal pronouns if they are in the subject position, so they are dropped. But in this representation, we do have the personal pronoun inserted by default if it's not present in there. Then we know that the past is actually a time designation, so it was in the past. The only is a rematizer, meaning or focalizer. Again, it might be difficult to say exactly the scope, but in this case, it was decided that it's the problems that are in the scope of that only. There are the T's, but you don't see any preposition. The preposition was was used as an indication that the T's are actually the patient of the problems. Problems were taken as a state, and it has an actor, that's me, who has the problems, and it's the T's with which I have the problems. So again, it has an actor, and that actor co-refers with the actual subject of the whole sentence. So just this is a very short description. Of course, there are many more attributes which are not even on the screen, which describe each of those nodes, such as the tense of the main verb and so on and so forth. So this is just an example of what we would like to use. Now, again, those who have been here last week or the tutorial, they know that we don't just have the tectogrammatic representation and then the form of the sentence, that we have two more levels in between. And if I go top down, so this is the tectogrammatic representation. Then we have the surface syntax, so something like the Penn TreeBank, except this is dependency-based, and with just very simple functions relating words in the within the dependency relations. Then we have the morphological layer, which doesn't have any structure, but it describes individual words in terms of morphology. And then we have the original word forms. And of course, if we want to work with speech, then we also have to have the audio layer, which probably we haven't shown last week, but certainly that's just a what we would probably call the minus one layer, or simply the input layer for that. So what is the idea of how to use this in speech reconstruction? Well, first of all, I should describe the word reconstruction. By reconstruction, we mean to give also a transcript, but to give a transcript that would, let's say, be printed in a newspaper if you make an interview with someone. That someone will definitely use some repetitions, additions, filler words, ums, and other sounds, and you don't print them exactly, right? So current ASR systems would actually give you all these words, but you won't do that unless that person says something that you really want to get into print to make fun of him or whatever. But you normally edit it, and you get a standard English or standard Czech when you actually print that. So that's what we call reconstructed speech. In some cases, though, if we actually do the deep analysis of the original ASR output, which simply gives us all the words and maybe some of them imperfectly and so on and so forth, sometimes we might want to keep this representation for other applications directly. So if you are not going to convert the speech into an interview and print it, then we simply might be happy with the deep representation as such if we want to answer questions or do translation or something. We don't want to generate back. But again, we can also, once we have the correct data, we can also try to do some things directly. So this is an example of an alignment between what was actually spoken with all these words, including the repetition and so on, and what would be the edited version, or the what we would call the standard version or the reconstructed version. You see, there are some words which will disappear in the standard. This is actually a very simple case. There are in some of the sentences we saw in the spoken corpora, they are much more complicated. Sometimes you don't even know what the people want you to say. But sometimes it's even easier than that. On top of doing the alignment, saying which words disappeared and which words correspond to which words, we also use types for those links. And I put only some of them. There is actually a much longer list, and Aaron will probably talk about that, of types of the links, what changes had to be done, both from the linguistic and the technical point of view. And once we have those data, then we, of course, can analyze the correct sentence, the reconstructed sentence, and we can, by using the links, we can relate it to the original sentence, and we can then try some experiments how to actually get from the original speech to the reconstructed one. And we actually can do it the other way around also, right? If you want to really simulate a person who does lots of repetitions, we can also kind of convert it and do it the other way. So that's one of the that's the speech part. Now, for machine translation, it might be more obvious how to use a meaning representation here. The usual picture that people show, it's a kind of a triangle that was probably drawn many years ago for the first time. But let me just show it now broken down into the layers. This is our morphological layer, the syntactic layer, and the meaning layer. I think even if people don't use exactly the PDT style, if they do translation, they always do some kind of analysis, then the actual transfer or translation, and then some generation on the target side. So in this case, we thought that for the meaning, we would actually use the tectogrammatic representation, that we would analyze the sentence correctly to get the meaning of it in the form of this tree that you have seen two foils ago, and then we will generate on the either the English or the Czech side the correct form of the target sentence. So for the actual project, what we will have to do, and we will also hear in the talks that we are actually working on this, is to first to prepare data, because for these statistical methods we need the data, and we need data on two fronts. One is the spoken data, the reconstructed speech with those links, And on the machine translation front, we will need actually a parallel corpus analyzed all the way to the dectogrammatical layer. So again, if you have been here on Wednesday, I talked about the Czech English parallel corpus, which is the thing that actually will be used within this project. And then once we have the data, then we of course will run experiments in both speech reconstruction and translation. So that's all I wanted to say, and there are some pointers in the end that you might want to note, which talk about the prior program, about our project, and some of the data. So thank you, and if you have any questions, I will be happy to answer them.